Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 69, the eighth part of Physiology. We will have a look at the lungs. Now, if we think of the lungs in relationship to the heart, we could say in one way that the heart is more of an inwardly directed, more introverted organ. As I said, it is very much responding to what the blood brings it. It is intelligently, wisely working with that and trying to bring a degree of balance into our entire organism. It is stopping things for a moment and then letting them go forward. And it is very, very much in tune with our life of feeling, that which is rising up out of us and trying to compensate for the tremendous catabolic harm that can do the rest of our organism. The lungs, on the other hand, can't help but be connected with the outer world because they are bringing oxygen to the blood. They are carrying carbon dioxide away from the blood. While the blood lives inwardly, it relies on the lungs to make that connection with the world around us and draw in those substances which the blood needs to go forward. In fact, you are going to see in your class children who are carrying now much more iron, particularly the boys, a much higher percentage of iron in their blood than they did a year ago, certainly more than they did 2 years ago. When we talk about all the chemicals arising in their body, this iron is rarely mentioned, and it's probably the most important of all, because we might say it is giving them the capacity for greater oxygenation, for more life forces to course through them. And on the other hand, of course, then all of that gets them hyped up and they fall down as a result of it, and suddenly they don't have much life at all. So this is interesting, this profusion, proliferation of iron in the body. No wonder it's a good time to be teaching about magnetism and electromagnetism, as Roberto shows us in his physics film. And also, this is a time when girls who are not perhaps able to carry all of that iron, they are more prone to anemia or something like that. And there have been, over the years, many illnesses that girls, particularly in Victorian times of this age, were prone to. But certainly their relationship to their blood, both in terms of its chemical composition and in terms of the monthly period they have, all of this is no less important. And the lungs are bringing that which combines with the iron. It is interesting to point out to the children that our wonderful blood red color within us shows health and vitality. But as soon as iron is turning red outside, it's rusting. The fact that iron has such an affinity to oxygen is its great weakness, and iron has so many strengths that can be counterbalanced. But the inevitability of rust in iron is the same thing as the possibility of the redness of our blood. Once again, the lungs are what is bringing that oxygen to us. So they are out there. Now, I've said that the astral body never penetrates us more than 50%. Even when it is strongly incorporating, as in the adolescent, even when it has reached the fullest extent of its incorporation when we are adults, never more than 50% of our astral body is within us. Why is that? Because the other half must be out there in the world in along with our breath. It is breathing out and breathing in, breathing out and breathing in. We never expel all of the air from our lungs. We never fill our lungs 100% with fresh air. There's always something of this pendulum swing going back and forth. So our astral body needs to be engaged with others around us, with the animal world and with our fellow human beings in particular. This is why this is such a powerful social age. It's because of our breathing. It is because our breathing is changing, our breathing is growing more vitalized, and so are our social relationships. So this is a very exciting thing to bring to the children. Not that you need to talk about the astral body, but talk about the air that we breathe. For example, it is said, I'm not sure what the scientific proof is, that every time you breathe, you are breathing a million or more molecules of the same air that Leonardo da Vinci once breathed. That he breathed it out, and now it is coming along with the breath of many a great artist of the Renaissance, all of them. Leonardo was just the example. Michelangelo, Raphael, Masaccio, Giotto, all the rest, as well as all of the villains in history, as well as everybody who's ever lived on the earth, that if we think of our atmosphere as being, for all practical purposes, a closed system, we realize then how much we are actually at all times recycling the air that we breathe. However, by breathing out carbon dioxide, we are also, at least at night, we are, we are nurturing the world of the plants. And they then are able to breathe out to us, we might say, a rejuvenated oxygen. An oxygen which, to some degree, the plant has newly created. So clearly, as we've known from grade 5 on, our breathing and the plant world have an incredibly important connection. And we know that the rampant destruction of trees, and not just in the 20th century or right now either, but pretty much from the time that human beings began to farm and began to build, that this has meant there's less and less freshness in the air we breathe. And indeed, the sight in well-to-do towns of oxygen bars where people go in for some oxygen refreshment is probably going to be a more and more common sight in our time. Whether it's really needed or not, the feeling is that our air is not nurturing us in quite the same way as it did in the past. So this is another aspect of our lungs. And also to, you know, do a drawing or whatever, show the structure of the lungs, you'll see, unfortunately, only one drawing of that in our slideshow, but that the lungs really are in themselves, they're the bronchial tree. They are within us, the tree that we carry, which is in a very strong relationship to all of the trees outside of us. We have a kind of microcosmic forest there, which goes down to the most minute microscopic formations, which provide then tremendous surface area so that the air is able to be brought into our body as quickly and efficiently as possible. So the interior of the lung is nothing more than tremendous surface area and hollowness. It's a very hollow space. Our blood, we might say, goes through a kind of negative space in our heart and is paused there and transformed. The air that we breathe goes into the very hollowness of our being, not creating a vacuum, but rather bringing an exchange of gases. And this is why as Roberto showed, the study of carbon dioxide and oxygen can be very beneficial this year in chemistry. Or if you don't want to study them per se, to bring them into relationship at least with acids and bases. So here we have the acids and bases as the primary interest in studying digestion, and now oxygen and carbon dioxide also connected with acids and bases as the primary interest when we look particularly at our respiratory system. Now, concerning this breathing in and out and the 50-50 relationship of the astral body to our inner life, we see an increase in our time due to many, many factors, and air pollution is probably among them, in chronic breathing problems. One of them is the fastest growing illness among children, and this is asthma. And yes, some of you in the class have asthma, and maybe you want to talk about it a little bit. It would be good if you spoke to the children and their parents first, so nobody feels embarrassed, ashamed, even though in a Waldorf classroom, everybody's extremely tolerant, and you know, no one is looked down upon because they have one or another illness. At least we hope they're not. But anyway, if you get permission and you can talk about this, what asthma is where one takes a breath, which is a good thing to take, and it's very hard to release that breath. And the breath sort of gets stuck within one, so that we might say the inner life is stronger in that respect. It wants to hold on. There's a kind of cramping, and it won't release the air into the world. In something like emphysema, which tends to be an illness of older people, there the air from outside can't come in. There's a kind of blockage, and the person is gasping for breath. There we could say that they are too much out there and can't bring themselves in. And in the case of a young person, interestingly enough, something gets stuck within and can't go out. And we could all have something like this experience. And of course, in this block, you'll probably want everybody to, you know, hold your breath for as long as you can. But the other thing we don't think about is let out all of your breath for as long as you can. That's another sort of daunting task to try to do that as well. And we could talk about those individuals, swimmers, the pearl divers of old who have all but disappeared, or a figure like the great Houdini, who was not a musician, a magician really, didn't work magic, but simply gained control over some of his vital life systems to an unheard of degree. What it means then to hold one's breath, how you feel, how you look when you're doing that, what it's like when you release it, and what it's like to release your breath and hold back from breathing it in. So whatever you do with the lung, you want to really bring it into a kind of set of polarizations. You know, don't forget that we even have two lungs. There's a polarized quality there and a symmetrical quality. And that's another reason that we could say the lungs are more connected to the outer life. The lungs are sort of that part of our rhythmic system which is looking up at the sensory nerve system, where we do have two ears, two eyes, two nostrils, two lips, symmetrical teeth. So the lungs are very much connected to that sensory part of our nature, and they are like two sensory organs which are bringing to us tidings from the world outside and pouring something out into it. It's interesting for the children perhaps to think back to grade 5 when we learned about the ancient Indian yogi and what his practices were. They all involve controlling the breathing. in a way they controlled slowing, that control was of the nature of slowing down the breathing to a point where you become like a hibernating animal. And by doing that, by standing very close to the threshold of death, you know, slow down your breathing anymore and no oxygen is coming into you and you're not going to live very long. By doing that, the yogi was able to enter into the spiritual world, the world that others might only enter into after death. Now, it's interesting, once again, for us as teachers to think about this, that Steiner has said breathing exercises like that are completely inappropriate in our time. What would he think had he visited any local strip mall to see the 5 yoga shops there, the yoga studios and the popularity of yoga? But of course, today's yoga pales besides what the real yoga was. But Steiner has said that the air today, no surprise, is so materialized that it no longer can carry the spirit. The air we breathe, indeed, the light of the sun today also, in and of itself, does not carry spirit. Rather, he said, we need a breathing of the senses in which we learn that we not only go out into the world with our senses, but we're also drawing impressions within us, that we are really always breathing with those senses. And many of Steiner's preparatory exercises, his exercises in contemplation, we might say, are very much this breathing with the senses. And of course, this is what we're hoping to do with the children, not to make them anthroposophists or get them on our meditative path, but to help them through the arts, through music, feeling a kind of breathing of the ear, playing a tone and taking it in, playing it, taking it in, singing a tone and taking it in, creating a color form and taking that in, and so on. We are really trying to bring a new consciousness to our breathing, but not through the medium of air, but rather through the medium of sensory experience.